Welcome back, everybody, to The Slow Pitch. And today we have Wade Gault, who is going to join us today. And Wade, we are talking about 80-20 filtering your prospects. Basically, create a three-day weekend lifestyle. Is that even possible?
So first of all, there's sort of two parts. The 80-20 filtering is very possible, necessary if you want to stay sane. And as far as the three-day week, and the short version is, you've made raises in money over your years. Why not take raises in your paid time off? So whether you're an employee or an entrepreneur, it's very doable if you work towards it.
I like it. All right. Well, let's dig into that. Let's get started.
You're listening to the Slow Pitch Podcast, a podcast about selling less and closing more.
All right, so you say we can basically have a three-day weekend by 80-20-ing our prospects. So first of all, tell me a little bit about what you're talking about here. What do you do? How do you, you know, give me a little bit of background here. So everybody kind of knows who you are and what you do.
My background, I'm 35 plus years in and out of the multi-line insurance agency world. Dad's a State Farm agent. I grew up in that world, worked for that company, and for the last 20 plus years have consulted State Farm agents, their team members, other insurance agency owners and team members around the United States on how to grow their business, everything from recruiting, compensating their team members. I have a small software company that helps compensate their team members, incentivizing team members, sales process, multi-line sales process. So everything from just acquisition to cross-selling, or as they call it in their field, multi-lining, and then also helping people get more results in less time so they can have a four-day work week, three-day work week type of lifestyle, whatever it is that you like. And basically each of those pieces in and of itself is its own conversation, but you can put them together. And when it comes to 80-20-ing your prospects, it really is just about seeing a lot of it's very similar to, if you've read or familiar with Perry Marshall's book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, phenomenal book. And It really is about seeing who really wants to be responsive to you. And that stuff, I read his book, but I'd already seen that in other mentors that told me the same or a similar message in different ways. Now, he does it so brilliantly the way he communicates it, but just the idea of looking at who's really interested in you, not looking to persuade people. It's almost the exact opposite of what we were taught in the 80s. So the 80s was look like you're perfect, push hard, persist. Hey, Rob, are we going to talk today? Are we going to talk tomorrow? And all these different things. And usually it's in a voice like that. And most people have gotten tired of that. They've gotten tired of the push, the pressure. A lot of the best employees or sales professionals that are good account managers or people who retain clients and keep clients don't like that because it feels icky. It feels pushy. It feels manipulative. And so you can still say to your clients, look, here's what we do. Here's how we help. And if you're interested, great. And usually at least 20, 30, 40% of the people are at least going to give you a shot to talk to them. And then you can go deeper and then see who actually buys from there. And then the other ones, depending on your business model, it might be that they're just interested in sort of your base level offering and they're not interested in the advanced level offering, but it doesn't have to be a push. It doesn't have to be a grind. And the more you push, it's actually you're in the long run, it hurts you.
Yeah.
And so that also works similarly with a three-day weekend lifestyle in the sense of the better you get at it, the more results you get in less time. If you can keep your expenses the same or similar, to keep it real simple, well, then you can get more results in less time. And there's more to the three-day weekend piece as well. But at the end of the day, it's really just saying, okay, I can keep my expenses chill. I don't have to increase my expenses every time I make more money. And I can work with the people who really want to work with me best. And I can up my game professionally within a field and be that person they really want to talk to.
Yep. So I'm hearing you say, there's a couple pieces that are kind of inherent in what you're saying to me. One is you're only paying attention to those prospects or those people that you know are interested in you and your service. So you're basically saying you're firing prospects before they know they're a prospect sometimes. You're just getting rid of those that don't matter. You're saying, these are not people that should be in my pipeline.
Yeah, so it depends on your model. So again, I'm used to the insurance agency model. And so what you have in a lot of insurance companies is clients will buy the auto insurance and the homeowner's insurance because they have to by law. So that's coming in the door. And then some of these companies will also sell life insurance, health insurance, disability insurance. So that's their sort of their cross sell. Well, a certain percentage of the clients say, look, I'm not interested in your other stuff. I just came here for the auto and fire because I have to. Either I don't believe insurance. I don't believe you're the person. My brother-in-law sells insurance, whatever it is. And a lot of people in that profession are still trying to convince, they're trying to persuade somebody. You hear this saying, overcoming objections, which to me is the craziest friggin' thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
Now, I believe in clarifying objections. Is that an obstacle or an objection? I say, hey, Rob, you want to come into the office? You say, Wade, you know what? I really don't want to come in. My schedule's tight, but I'd be happy to meet you on Zoom. Okay. That wasn't an obstacle. Or excuse me, what is an objection? That was an obstacle. And I clarified that. And sometimes you can anticipate, say, hey, I could help you this way or that way. But this whole thing of Rob saying, you know, I do not like green eggs and ham. I don't like them, Sam. I am. And me saying, well, I'm just going to keep pounding on you until you say yes. That's no longer viable because of social media. Because now people get the reputation. Oh, gosh, no, you don't want to talk to this person. This person's just going to hammer you. They're not in it for you. They're in it for them. It's all about them, their goals, their this, their that. So it depends. So in that model, I don't fire that group that says, I only want auto insurance, but I'm in home insurance and I'm happy. I don't want your second level offering. So sometimes it's, you have different levels of offerings. And then sometimes it is just that sense of you reach out to certain people, you make things available, even what you and I are doing with a podcast or any sort of media.
Yep.
We're of course looking to see who's interested, but as you and I both know, sales is so much of a disqualification game. We want to find out who's not interested so that we don't waste our time and energy. Because if we can invest our time with the people that really are interested, that's well worth it. It's not personal. It's not getting upset. It's not, well, I thought you liked me. And it's not even, well, you have a lot of money, therefore you want to buy from me. Bill Gates has a lot of money. Not everybody can sell him something. He might not be interested. But there are people that say, I like what you do. I vibe with what you do. I find it interesting. I'm at least willing to listen. Those are the people we want to invest our time in. And now with technology, part of our funnel becomes, how efficient can we make that filtering process? Can we have a questionnaire? Can we have a strategy session where the person says yes or no? Can we have other pre-educational information where we get them to see, this is what I'm about? So if they've seen a few of my videos and they show up with me, it's not a surprise. They're already, chances are if they're showing up, they're at least pretty open to buy, or they're ready to buy and they're just wondering which one I'm going to help them with, as opposed to, you know, spending so much time in the most painful and costly part of the sales process, which is trying to persuade somebody.
Yeah. And that's what I've noticed is a lot of people spend a lot of time, too much time, in the whole beginning of the conversation, working them through to trying to get them to get to the next step and trying to work on, you know, finding out more information and then getting more steps. When in reality, they should be realizing this person's not going anywhere. They're pushing back on you because they're just not interested. And so why are you carrying on saying, well, let's keep talking about this product or this service, right? Your philosophy is, and I have the same philosophy, and that is, my job is to disqualify you as quickly as I can. And that sounds rude, but it's not. It's actually saving them time. They don't want to talk to you any more than you want to waste your time. So they're already saying, listen, here's a great example. I had a magazine call my business and say, we would like to have you guys, we have an ad space in our magazine, we'd like you to buy, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Very quick conversation in the beginning. And I said, my business doesn't really do much from a lead source whenever we've done a print type of thing or whenever we've done a magazine like you're describing. And they went on, I kid you not, I interrupt them on purpose for 5 minutes, telling me all the information about their magazine, where it's going, why we would be a good fit, blah, 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 all these other things. And there's pictures and we can do QR codes and we can do links and we have a digital version. So you can, they got done with all that. And I said, I heard you. I listened to you. And I heard everything you said. And I really appreciate you telling me all that. I don't think it's a good fit because of this, this, and this. And she goes, okay, but did you know about, and she went on for another couple minutes. And finally I said, I don't think you're listening. I've told you twice. I'm not interested. Why are you continuing to waste your time on somebody like me? And she goes, oh, I'm so sorry. And I go, I'm just telling you this because I know a bad sales call when I hear one, and you shouldn't be continuing on. I know there's a difference between when you're cold calling, somebody's going to tell you no automatically. I get that. But after I've listened to you for 5 minutes, I know what you're asking me for and I know what you're selling. Why are you continuing on for more after that? And I tell you again. And she's like, okay, all right, I appreciate that. And listen, I had no problem. I tried to save face a little bit with her. Like, I didn't want to make her feel bad, but I did want her to understand you're taking the time that's unnecessary when you could be calling somebody and finding out, yeah, you know what? I've been looking for exactly that because I'm a B2C kind of a business, right? I'm not a B2C business. I'm a B2B business. I don't need that kind of thing, right? It's amazing. And I think that's what you're kind of describing. By 80-20-ing, you're identifying as quickly and as early as possible what's a good fit, what's less of a good fit, right? Is that's kind of what you're trying to do?
Absolutely. So to your example, somebody might be go on and on, and you know, they might be selling steak and you're a vegan, let's say. It's like there's certain things that are just
same idea.
They're not going to change. And I think what a lot of people mistake in the process is they understand, okay, I got to work hard. Understood. Hard work is very often, not always required, at least to start something, or at some point hard work's in the equation somewhere, not always the entire equation. But here's the thing. You and I both know there's kind of almost two different ways to approach it. One is to say, I'm going to make five sales calls because I need to sell five products, and I'm going to just beat up the five people I talk to.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to send five postcards or send five emails, whatever it is, five possibilities, or I'm going to send 100, knowing that chances are I send 100, 80-something percent of them, just not even close, but then 20% maybe I can get in a conversation and of that, you know, and then the funnel kind of goes from there in just sort of a basic funnel. Now that's even, that's sort of funnel 101 when you say, okay, I'm starting kind of cold. Now, when you start, so let's say you have a business and you have 100 prospects that have bought, let's say, level one products. You and I know this concept of a tripwire in business. So, you know, some initial product that's a low dollar product. If you're an author, it's a book. If you're, you know, it's a loss leader, it's whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so you're looking to see, okay, who's gonna go to perhaps to that next level? So first of all, you're already dealing with, let's say, somebody who's bought something from you. Okay, so already they're way more qualified than nobody, you know, random person. So let's say of those 100 people, 20 of them decide that they're willing to do whatever your process is, your strategy session, your call, and they're willing to fill out, and this is huge, at least for me, some sort of questionnaire about what is going on with them. Because if I'm going to give you a strategy session, and if I'm going to say, look, I'm willing to invest in what you want to call it, a free call, free consultation, whatever it is, but if I'm going to give you anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour of my time, preferably 30 minutes, unless you're really well referred by a really good lead, how is it that I can tell you, you know, Rob, I'm going to give you 30 minutes of my time for nothing, but once we're done, see, I'm a coach and I'm going to charge you $500 an hour, $1,000. And he's, what happened to that third, you know, first 30 minutes? It's like the two eggs, the second egg is half off. What was wrong with the second egg? And so you say, well, hold on. So I'm not going to give you my 30 minutes in that initial consultation, but if you'll fill out this information so that I can actually provide value for me, I can jump right in and start coaching. Let's just in that example, or consulting, whatever it is. But I can help you right away. And what I'm going to do in this half hour, for example, is I'm going to help give you an idea of the game plan. I'll give you the game plan because not everybody's going to implement it. And I'll give you the idea. And ideas, as we know, are a dime a dozen.
Dime a dozen.
But I'm going to give you, here's how we're going to do it. And then at the end, you can decide, A, if you like the plan or the idea, and B, if you like it, well, there's a good chance you're going to probably want to do it with me. But if you won't fill out that questionnaire, I won't meet with you.
Yeah.
So even in the, like I use Calendly, I used to use Acuity, and my questions, there's a certain number of questions you have to answer before you can even schedule the appointment. And if you won't, I just won't meet with you. Why? Because if you won't fill out those questions, what are the chances you're going to buy from me? So that's one example of a very simple automated filter. Now what, Calendly and Acuity, they're both like, what, $15 a month. And that's just one simple example where I'm not trying to sell you. I know there's 7.5 to 8 billion people on the planet. And I know if I'm in the US, I know there's 300 something million, there's at least 200 something million buyers. And somebody wants my stuff if I've done even any decent amount of research. And certainly if I'm in a field that somebody else is in. So now it becomes, okay, somebody wants my stuff. Well, what perspective do they want? Well, Johnny wants insurance from somebody who's from his own culture. Susie wants somebody that has the same accent as her. Eddie wants somebody who went to the same college as him. Okay, I went to the same college as Eddie. Guess what? Just what? Now this is easier. And everybody's got their own sort of way they slice the world. And some people say, I just want somebody that's going to help me. But overall, trying to persuade somebody, once you feel like you're trying, like you're, quite a few people call this leaning in, like you're leaning in to try to pull them, you've lost all your power.
Exactly.
And so even any deal that you make is not going to be on your terms.
Yeah.
And you're going to be overselling yourself, or if you're a coach, you're going to promise too many sessions, you're going to overpromise, and then you're going to have all this, and then you collect the money, and that's even the worst thing. Now you've collected the money on things that are bad deals for you, where you're going to lose money, or at least be paid really low, and you're saying, and then we get mad at the client, because how dare they hold me to what I said, well, okay, I'll lower the price. And so again, I want to find that person who already sees me and says, yeah, wait, dude, you wear Hawaiian shirts, you've come from an insurance background, you believe in the long game, you believe in sort of the farming approach to making sales happen, as opposed to the, we're going to make something happen in 30 seconds.
Yep.
Okay. Then maybe that's somebody I can work with.
Yep. And to me, there's a lot to be said about somebody who gets that piece and knows when it's time to continue the conversation. And here's the other balance that you have to have. Just knowing our conversations that we've already had, the balance is you have to make it feel like it's their
idea to continue to move forward. Because by allowing them to make that decision to move forward with you, if you kind of keep that in mind, they are keeping you moving forward without you having to pull them along. If you have to pull them along, you're exactly right with a Calendly. You know, if they don't fill out the questions or you have a questionnaire that you have to do, it's simple steps that they have to take. Because if they're not willing to, I hate to use the word comply, but if they're not willing to take the steps necessary to even engage in a conversation with you in the beginning, they don't feel like you're an equal, right? And so after you start working together, they're going to treat you like a vendor rather than an equal or somebody that they're on even footing with or whatever you want to call it. They're looking at you and say, just take care of dance, monkey, dance. And that's not what you are, right? You're the kind of person that's, hey, I'm here to help you any way I can. I will get you everything I can out of this. Here's my rate, whatever it is. But you're going to do that. But you're not going to dance for them. You're going to be a partner together. We're moving step by step together to the next step, whatever that might be. And that to me is the difference between really good, we've talked about this before. That's a difference between a really good salesperson is somebody that listens, somebody that allows the buyer to make a decision that this is a good decision for them, that continues to walk together hand in hand, so to speak, to the next step. That's when you know you have a good buyer. That's when you have a good salesperson as well. Those two work together well when it comes to the sale. It's the people that try to push or pull on either side. There's somebody's trying to have a power struggle there, and that doesn't work. That somebody's going to lose in that case. And a lot of times, that's where salespeople end up dropping their price, right? Is that where you've run into that, where you start having that power struggle? You start having to feel like you have to, whether or not you do?
Well, a couple things. So number one, and I, you know, dating analogies, I think work so well with sales. If you're the person and you're trying to get somebody to love you and they really ultimately don't love you, you're like, I like you, you're nice, I'll hang out with you. And I'll literally go out with you and I'll have a nice time with you, but I'm not interested. You know, I'm not romantically interested and I'll hang out. Well, yep. If you get the message and you say, okay, well then great, then let's just hang out, no problem. But if you're constantly trying to sell, well, you should fall in love with me. That's a very sad path. Yeah. As far as business, I've done it before where you discount my pricing. Maybe that's the obstacle. And the truth is, if you've helped somebody see what it's costing them, and this is, and everybody's got their own way of wording things, but, and again, I've been around sales and coaching a lot. You know, back in the 80s, we talked a lot about buy-in. Buy-in to me is me getting you to agree with something that benefits me and might or might not benefit you. Because otherwise, why would you have to buy in? If it's really awesome, you don't need to buy in. You just need to say yes. And so to your point, I really truthfully, if you're not interested, I want to know as quickly as possible because I'm already wasting my time. So the quicker I can find that out, so I don't even have this sense of how quickly can this happen or will it happen, is here's what I do. And so I'm going to work on my presentation. So I think of it this way, to use an example, if I'm going to, there's an ad came out recently with Slash, the guitarist from Guns N' Roses, and he's auditioning for this like high school band. And like, you're in. It's like, well, of course, because he's Slash from Guns N' Roses. When you're so overprepared, or I think it was a Steve Martin that said, you know, you're so good, they can't ignore you. You're just no matter, like that's how you break into Hollywood. You just have to be so good, they can't ignore you. When you're like that, the business comes to you. And then also when you've worked from those 100 people and you found those 20 people up top that'll work with you, you don't have to go to another 100 people. You get those 20 people do a phenomenal job. And then you get them and help them so much that they want to send you their friends. And in fact, if you have to ask for the referral, kind of reminds me of the Prince song, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. If you have to ask for the referral, it's not always a great sign. Now, if you say, hey, just so you know, I have availability. But again, it's a very casual thing. The difference between the guys like, Susie, will you go out with me? I really, really like you. And if you can't go out today, I'll go out tomorrow or the next day. Versus, hey, Susie, I'm going to the wherever it is. I'm going to this concert, that. If you'd like to go, I have a ticket. And you're welcome to join me. And Susie says no. And you're still interested. Well, Susie, and then I can just leave it there. And the confidence to say, okay, I'm going to let that lie and I'll come back later. Versus that fear, or even just that over-preparation or under-preparation where you don't know your product and the client just senses this kind of nervous vibe and all they know, they don't know what it is, but they're like, okay, I'm out.
Yep.
And you know, sales is kind of an unforgiving process, but if you're listening, again, it's less cruel to find out earlier that you're screwing up a sales call than to spend another 30 minutes.
And you're less invested, like you have less time invested. So if you find out early, if you find out in 10 minutes that this is not going to be a fit and you call it, they're like thankful for because they know it's not a fit. You'll be thankful because you're like, I can work on something else. Like, I don't know how many times I've done that where I've like, I think this person's going to be a good fit. We start talking, we get into it, and all of a sudden it's, this is not going well. And I just ask the question, I get the feeling this is not a good fit for you. I mean, maybe we should just part ways. It's, you know, it just sounds like it's not going to be a fit at all. And they're like, yeah, it's, I don't think so. Okay. Or it's, No. I'm sorry if I've made you feel that way. That's not at all. I'm actually interested in what you're... Now I know I have somebody actually interested, right? Because they've actually started to engage back with me.
So yeah, so it's, to me, it's a lot of the difference between, let's say, even sales and marketing. If your marketing is strong, if your branding, your communications, the messaging you have, think of the iPhone. Their branding is so strong, their marketing is so strong, that when they just say, we've got a new version coming out, people literally camp out to get the product. Well, the people at the iPhone store, they're not selling iPhones. They're order taking. And that's not a criticism. That's not a knock to say that they're doing something wrong. It's to say that their marketing is so strong that the sales doesn't have to be that powerful. If you have to really dig in deep and hard sell, well, then you didn't do the preparation. It's like a baseball player that's trying to, you know, to save a game as a pitcher in the ninth inning, you're down five runs. There's not, I don't care how, you can't really save that, versus if you've laid the foundation well and you've set stuff up, again, people will give you hints. And again, you want to see those hints, because even if the hint is, I'm not sure, to your point, you can say, hey, is this a good, and I'll just say even more open, is this still a good time for you? And I don't even say, yep, you look distracted or this and that, because then sometimes they'll feel like, is this still a good time for you? Oh, no, you know, and they're like, you read my mind. Well, of course, I read your mind. It's all over your face. Yeah, I just was willing to acknowledge it. But again, this is where, you know, you, again, go back to the basics of a filter. If they won't fill out the questionnaire, if you won't fill out the questionnaire for your doctor or your dentist, they won't even see you.
Yeah.
And so what I want to be able to do as a professional is I want to have my branding, my LinkedIn, my podcast, my marketing, my YouTube, whatever it is, all that I'm doing at such a level that when people meet with me, and this is what I do, that usually no matter what it is that they're coming to me for, they're either referred to me by an existing client who's awesome. They've come in from my YouTube channel or from my podcast. Somehow they already know something about me. I'm not against cold calling or out, but I don't do outgoing marketing.
Yeah, you don't have to.
I just don't do it. I've tried it. I stink at it. So yep. I'm not against it. If I was great at it, I'd do it.
Yep.
But so when the person comes in, I'll just say, hey, you know what? The best way I can help you and make the best use of your time and provide value for you, whether you decide to do business with me or not. See, I'm going to give you a half hour of my time. Tell me what's going on in your business. I'll tell you what you need to do if that's within my area of expertise.
Yep.
And then when you're done, you can then decide you want to do that information. But if you won't fill out that questionnaire, you can't even schedule it. Now, I'm not going to say, if you won't do it, I won't schedule it, because I'm not looking for confrontation. But it's when people ask, sometimes they'll say, look, if you don't give me the information on your situation, you now put me into the position of a pitch man. And now I've got 30 minutes to just beat you up and pitch you and get me to buy my stuff. And as somebody who also has a software business, the last thing in the world, if you think having a coaching client that didn't want to be there is bad, try a software client. And then it's tech support and they don't understand and they're ticked off. And why doesn't it do this? I thought it had this feature. No, I don't. I genuinely, with all love in my heart, I don't want you if you're not a fit.
Yeah.
And the clients that value me at a certain level, not everybody values me at this level. 10, 15% of the people, maybe 5%.
Right.
So I'm willing to look to find those, because those will pay 5 to 10 times more.
Yep.
Because there is a fit. Once you can then identify and work on who are those people, going now in some way, at least lightly connected to your lifestyle, then it becomes, well, as I start making more money and I stop investing my time in things that aren't making money, can I keep my expenses good enough or tight enough where, let's say I was making $80,000 a year in 5 days a week, let's say. I'm working for a company, I'm working for myself. It really doesn't matter. Yep. Because now most companies are at least open to the idea. So I say, so I'm making $80,000. My expenses are, I'm living well, I'm putting away money, I'm all good. And let's say I figure out how to get to $100,000. Now I've got a couple choices. I could say, okay, I'm going to continue to work 5 days, keeping the math real simple, and make $100,000. Or I could say, you know what? Not changing my expenses. And I'm going to talk to my boss, or if I'm an entrepreneur, I'm only going to work 4 days. Because now in those 4 days, I'm going to make my 80 instead of 5 days, 100. And sometimes it's not always that linear or that,
right,
exact. So sometimes I can still make 90 in those 4 days. And once I lock in my 4 days, now I can then scale even more and say, okay, now in 4 days, can I get to 120, 150, 200, whatever it might be. But most of us are still always going to that next highest level of income when 20 to 30 to 50,000 ago, we could have just for a moment paused, just a moment, all the stuff we're buying or all this extra, just long-term commitments, as opposed to, you know, if I take a big trip, even if it's 20,000, but it's a one-time trip, I'm not committed to it. And being able to then say, okay, to whatever level you want, there's no right or wrong answer to this, but that you have the freedom to do what you want with your family, your friends, your travel, your life.
I'm going to stop this conversation right now. If you're finding value in any one of our episodes, we want you to share it with somebody else. Just tell somebody, hey, go listen to these guys. This has been good. Second, give us a review. Tell us what you think. And the third thing, hit that subscribe button so that you always get updated every time we release an episode.
We'd really appreciate it. Now back to the show.
The other question that I would have then is, when you're 80-20-ing that process and you're going through that, that does that then translate as well from the prospecting activities? So I look at my activities. My activities usually are some networking, some online stuff that I have to make sure that I kind of keep in contact with. Maybe it's an email marketing blast. Maybe it's, you know, whatever it is. Maybe it's podcast, whatever it is. Once I go through all of that, am I supposed to be looking at that? And I know what I would say is the answer, but do you look at this and say, these are the activities, whatever those are that work for you? You just mentioned earlier, cold calling is not something you enjoy doing, but if that's somebody's stuff that they do to bring in new business and they measure that, do you 80-20 that as well?
So that's where it gets interesting, because philosophically or mathematically or logically, it makes sense that it's always, if you 80-20, that the numbers are going to hold. The numbers don't always hold, number one.
Right.
There's a few reasons. One, because sometimes the quality of the lead goes down. You find a lot of lead companies that if you give them carte blanche and your credit card, they'll give you everything they got. And maybe they only have a certain number of quality leads. And that doesn't make them bad. You said you wanted X number of leads. It's your job.
You got it. Yeah.
Figure out what's working and what's not working. Sometimes also, if you're intermittent with them, if you turn them on, turn them off, turn them on, turn them off, they'll usually give you better leads. And in addition to that, we're humans. So just because I work, and this is a key part of the three-day weekend concept, just because I put in 4 good days of work doesn't mean my fifth is going to be equal. I'm not a machine.
Correct.
I'm human. And so everything from rest to relaxation to, am I fulfilled? Am I enjoying this? To even the balance of, well, if I'm getting 3 days a weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, do whatever the heck I want, all of a sudden, Monday through Thursday doesn't have to be my one-stop shop to fulfill me, to make money and be fulfilling and be enjoyable and be productive. I mean, we've kind of put a lot of pressure on work to be everything.
Yes.
And I've still not found that it's everything for me. It's a lot of things. It's wonderful things, but it isn't always everything. And so what I try to look at, as opposed to making it purely mathematical, because again, humans aren't purely mathematical, though again, in large numbers, usually a lot of that stuff holds.
Yep.
But what I find is I want to continue to look for, how can I be of more value to this person? Not just how can I be more of service, because that's sort of very generic. And even how can I create more value? What does that mean? What's that next biggest challenge this person has, and how is it costing them? So I'll give you a very simple example in my business. So when I first started out, I was first doing coaching. I was just doing sales coaching, just outright literally training people. Here's how you sell. And that was one of the two or three things I was doing. Doing okay at it. One of my clients is like 20 plus years ago, says, Wade, you know, we have this software. It's not really helping us much. Do you have anything that would help keep the compensation opportunity in front of my team members, help them see it all the time, and help them realize that there's more money coming if they hit this next level and that next level? So I built that out. And for the last 20 plus years, that's been anywhere from 50 to 90% of my income. And now I run that company in about literally 4 hours a week, and it's just around 50% of my income. Because the fundamental holes, it passes the Google toothbrush test. You use it on a regular basis. And so in that case, I'm grateful that for whatever reason, at that moment, I was open to listen rather than say, no, you don't understand. I'm a sales coach and here's what I do. They wanted just something that would, and it doesn't fix everything. But for most people who are producing, it lead to a 10 to 15% increase. And then it also lead to stability of results, which in sales is a pretty big deal.
Yep.
So just being able to do that was one piece. But then I'd say, okay, now, so that's sort of first level issue. Well, the second level issue at a higher level, because the software you can only charge so much for. Back then it was a few hundred bucks. Now it's, let's say, $1,000 a year. But the bigger issue is, well, what if I have a team member that's not working out for me? Well, a team member not working out for me, let's say they make, I don't know, $4,000 base salary a month. They're costing me at least $5,000 to $6,000 a month. So every month I don't get this right. It's costing me $6,000. in total cost of the chair, all that stuff. And you say, well, how quickly can I figure out it's the wrong person? Okay, if I can shorten that time, that reduces my loss. How much better can I recruit? So now you're talking, we're talking a $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 issue as opposed to a sales increase of 10. So it's if you find that next issue, then the next person says, I'm willing to do this. The other person says, I'll DIY it. No problem. Nothing wrong with that. But there's usually a part of the group that says, well, if you helped me fix this, I'm not looking to be a recruiter. I'm looking to continue doing what I do and focus and get world-class at that. I don't cut my lawn. It's not because I'm better than that. I used to cut a lawn. I know how to cut a lawn, but that's not the best use of my time and talents at this particular stage of my life. And so as you do that, there are certain clients, and this is the brilliance of Perry Marshall's book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, as he says, in general, if you have about 100 clients and they're paying you for a solution. So in my case, let's say it was a software. And it's funny, I read this from him after this was actually happening in my business. So his book had been written, and what he said was true is what was going on in my business. He said, let's say you have about 100 clients, and I had more than that, but just to keep the number simple, I had about 100 clients paying $1,000 a year for this software. So $100,000 recurring revenue business, great stuff. He says, look, about 20% of those clients want a 4x solution. It doesn't mean they want to pay $4,000 for the same software, but they want another solution that's at a higher level. It's deeper, it's better, it's faster, it's more guaranteed, however you want to look at that. So they want that. And by the way, you're not selling it to them if they don't sell it to you. If they don't buy it from you, they're buying it somewhere else.
Yep.
They almost have a hole in their pocket. And then so you take that 20. She says, wait, so then 20 people times 4,000, that's 80,000 more of income. And then he says, and then that 20, take 20% of that. That's four people. They want a $16,000 solution.
Yeah.
That's another 64,000. And then 20% of that, which technically, if you start at 125, it'd be one. It's just 0.8, but round it to one, wants a $64,000-ish solution.
Yep.
And he has a calculator that helps you do the exact math.
Yep.
Long story short, that's just the natural piece. And so that's the other part of the 80-20 of realizing that if all you're doing is staying at that first level, you're missing out. And he makes an important point in the book that if you go from 100 and you say, well, does that mean if I have 100 people paying 1,000, does that mean, do I reverse those numbers that it's accurate in the large number? He says, no, because there's not infinite number of people on the planet, but usually it's actually more accurate the higher up you go. And so the more value you create, the more you help them with just in essence, bigger problems, then that's more likely. So you go more from generic solution to done with you to done for you, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And I think, knowing that that's kind of the natural progression of how people, you have different tiers of people. You know, one of the things that sometimes you run into is like, well, which person am I speaking to today? Sometimes you have to figure out the person that you're having the meeting with, are they on this tier or are they on the next tier? And so on several occasions, I've given them, listen, we do a couple of different options. And based on what you're describing in your scenario, we could do this, which is level one. We could also do level two, which is this much, which is more. And I don't think you'd ever need level three, which is significantly more. And you wouldn't say significantly more, but when they see the numbers, it's more, like by a lot. This could be, but I don't think that's what you would need. And on more than one occasion, somebody has said, actually, that's exactly what we're looking for. And I would have never found that out without asking those questions. But knowing that that tier level does exist with any group of people is very powerful. And I think he did a great job with, showing that statistically in the book. But more importantly, if you start to apply everything in life that way and you start looking at it and saying, well, how do I identify those that are at the higher tier? And how do I identify those that are at the mid tier? And how do I know that this person's at the lower tier? And every one of those individuals at any level is totally fine by me. It doesn't matter which one you want to buy.
Yeah.
It really doesn't, right? It's like, to me, it's income. It's helping us, helping you. We're all happy. And whatever level that is totally fine with me.
Yeah, and this is where, for me, sometimes questionnaires can help. Vision-based questions can help. Something even as simple as, you reached out to me. Dan or Susie referred you to me. What was it that they said that I do that you're hoping I can help you with?
Yep.
Another way, there's a gentleman by the name of Dan Sullivan. He owns a company called The Strategic Coach. And he has a question called the R Factor question. And the question is really simple. If you and I were talking 3 years from today, or it could be a different period of time, what would need to have happened for you to feel happy with your progress? So you didn't even have to ask them. They're saying it. We want the conversation. The more the work gets done in their head, that's better, because they feel comfortable with that. And it's not a manipulation. Yep. It's they can actually communicate their needs, and then you can decide, is it, you know, is there a fit or not? I don't
and
want
can you do what they're asking?
I don't care how much it costs. Right. And so, but when the person says, well, I want to make sure my team members are motivated. I want to make sure I do a better job of my recruiting. So if at least two team members aren't working out and I'm working too many hours, and I'd love to talk with, and it doesn't always work out exactly like that, but they'll vary. If you know your market and you've listened to them and you know their three to five top issues, usually they're going to say them to you before you even have to.
Yep.
And one of the things that he points out, and this is another filter, this R factor question, it's brilliant stuff. He says, look, if they won't answer the R factor question, they won't tell you, you're done. That's it.
Yeah.
Because if they won't share that with you, it's no different than the client who says, you know, gosh, one of the worst clients you can have as a coach is the person who won't read your $10 book, but wants to invest in your $10,000 coaching program.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, no, wait, I want the 10,000. No, you don't. Because that person isn't willing to read 150-page book, a 3-hour audio book, but they're going to do 50, 60, 80 hours of work. Some of the worst clients, I just pinged my credit card for 10,000. You got to make this happen, Rob. Dude, it's not magic. I can show you how to do these things.
Yep.
If I had a magic bullet, I'd be like just doubling
firing
money,
that thing off
money,
all day,
compounding money all day long. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's something involved. There's like, I tell people, I said, look, if I had magic brownies that could get your team members to sell more, I'd give you my magic brownies, or at least I'd sell them to you. Sadly, I have no magic brownies. So it's software and it's coaching and it's work, and not everybody's up to that. And if it's not working, if it's the wrong people, then it might be recruiting, help you find the right people.
Yep.
So it's still, there's still process, but I'm just got it to three or four options, and they don't necessarily have to be tiered, but usually by their nature, they're different level issues. You know, a 10% increase in production is different than a team member who's just absolutely in the wrong role and just costing me money and wasting space and eating up my other team members' time.
Yeah.
And then from a quality of life standpoint, me working 60 hours a week while I have a family at home and my kids are, you know, both under 5, as opposed to me having the ability to invest time with them, you start going into your, some might call them irrational or transrational, where you say, look, it really is priceless. Like, I'll pay the 10,000.
Yeah.
I have no desire where to lead you. My desire is to find out, where do you want to go? No different than if one of my children says, you know, I'd like to be an athlete. And I say, okay, which sport? And they say, yes, I'm really into this. Great. Now I want to invest in all the camps and the coaches, versus me saying, well, you know, you should be a blah, blah, blah player, because I was a blah, blah, blah player, and I'm going to put all this money. And you're really just, you know, it's not just blowing in the wind. You're peeing in the wind.
You really
gonna
are.
It's going to get on you. It's messy. It's sticky. It's,
yes.
It's just it's just not good.
Don't do it.
Sorry those who, for the analogy, but and yet if you want to be in anything for the long run, where you make better profits, where you have repeat clients, that you don't have to keep hustling and selling and grinding, and you get older and you don't want to hustle as much, because hunting, being a hunter and a hustler, that is a young person's game. That's the other part of the 80-20, is a long-term approach, which so lends itself to more time off, not need to hustle anymore, and all that stuff, as opposed to trying to constantly be hustling, and then also understanding that your job might or might not be your vocation or your life purpose or your why.
Yeah. As we wrap up, one of the things I would like to ask you then is, I'm new to sales. How do I get myself a 3-day weekend all the time and still be able to do my job and get the money that I need? Like, what's my first step or two that I should be doing to get myself closer to that?
If you're an employee, the short version is, you have to get the results first, prove it to your boss, and then negotiate it. If you're an entrepreneur, and this is like almost a disclaimer, how the sequence, if you will. If you're an entrepreneur, you just kind of start doing it.
Yeah.
But here's a couple things that happen. Number one, you'll always lose if you fight math. Keep your expenses on the lower side, bootstrap, don't go dropping $2,500, $10,000 on a coaching program. So if you can keep your expenses reasonable and understand that, okay, if it's the case that my weekends off is more important to me, that Friday off is more important to me than being on this cycle of, well, I'm making a lot of money, but I hate my job, so darn it, I'm gonna enjoy the heck out of my weekends, blow my money, and be stuck in this rat race forever.
Yeah.
So part of it's a very fundamentally sound financial piece. And then from a business operations piece, find your 5 to 10 best clients and say, look, I'd like your help. You're one of my best clients. And I'm looking to, number one, find more people like you, but that's kind of not a new thing. But number two, I want to find out, what are other ways that perhaps I could help you that are maybe bigger challenges for you, or people you know like you, that I can serve you with? It's not just about being linear, because if you stay linear, then no, you can't get
you'll never get there, right?
Of results in 4 days. You just can't. Unless you, I mean, now, well, put it this way, you usually can trim off about 10 to 20% of distraction, of foolish activity, of yeah. obsessive activity podcast hosts. We sometimes refresh our stats a couple times.
Yes.
You
yes.
know, things like that. But the biggest thing is you have to have something exciting to do on that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Because if you don't,
yep.
you're just going to show up on Friday and say, well, I didn't plan anything. I have two choices. I can pick my nose or go yep. work. And if those are the two options, well, then yeah, picking your nose is not that good of an
not
idea.
Not a good option. Yeah.
Go to work.
Yeah.
And last piece, as far as the every Friday forever, you're going to have situations where there's a conference that you want to go to on a weekend. I have that freedom. I'm able to be present with our kids. Our kids are 16 and 13.
Yep.
Being able to be present for them is really huge. And for some people, it might not be a 3-day weekend. It might be, wait, I want to work the days that my kids are in school and I want to have summer off or whatever it might be.
Yeah, that was my other
but
question.
Sales of all possessions is perfect.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, could you make your extra day off a Wednesday? What's wrong with that? Nothing wrong, right?
Nothing wrong with that. I like 3 days in a row because what I get when I take 3 days off is I pretty much, and maybe I'm just getting older, I forget what I do. That one extra day, being able to Thursday night know that, okay, I'm done. So a lot of it for me is the 3 days in a row works, and Fridays are, there's more going on Fridays socially than there is on Mondays. So some people like the Monday off because they just really hate Mondays.
Yeah.
But usually there's more fun stuff going on Fridays or Thursday nights, so I prefer
that's true.
Free weekend thing.
All right. So, you know, I think one of the other questions I should ask, and as we get to the end here, if somebody's been listening and they wanted to get a hold of you, what's the easiest way they could reach out to you?
Sure. If you're even remotely interested in the 3-day weekend type lifestyle, go to 3dayweekendentrepreneur.com or 3dayweekendclub.com. Either one. If you're an entrepreneur, the entrepreneur has the podcast, a little more detailed stuff. If you're an employee, the club. And that can help you get a sense of, there's free resources on each of them to help you get started in making the most of your life outside of work, the time outside of work, your money outside of work, and then start moving towards that. And then if you, other stuff, you could just look me up, wadegault.com.
Great. Okay. So Wade, I appreciate you coming on. I think we talked a lot about how to kind of fine tune a sales process a little bit in terms of how you look at prospects, leads, however you want to call them, how you work through the beginning stages, how you can maximize that time so that you're actually being more productive and kind of weed out essentially the ones that don't belong there and get you in front of the right people that you know are going to do something. We got to this point where we talked about, you know, what tiers they belong in and how to kind of bring them from one tier to another, how to use your extra time and getting yourself to a 3-day weekend if you wanted to on a more regular basis. And you don't have to do this every day. I know somebody one time who their whole thing was, my goal is to have a 3-day weekend every weekend. And then there was somebody else that I knew that said, I try to get 3-day weekends, but I know that sometimes it just doesn't work out, and that's okay. I just enjoy the 3-day weekend, and that's okay. You know, whatever way you want to do it is fine. I've long been an advocate of, if you're good at sales, you shouldn't have to work 50, 60, 70 hours every week. You should be able to work 30, 40 hours, easy, get what you need out of those time, and still have time left over. And I feel like secretly, I don't want to tell everybody, but good salespeople probably only need 2-3 hours a day to work. And the rest of the time is, they're probably just messing around. Okay, maybe not messing around, but they're doing the work that is behind the scenes you don't see, that they know what's going to bring them their work later. So they're planting seeds. They're doing all those things. A lot of times it's a little less visual and more like behind the scenes kind of stuff usually. But a good salesperson doesn't need a ton of time if they're really good at it. They kind of work their way through, identify who's a good lead, who's not a good lead, and keeps working through each one as they go. So
I would just put a stamp on what you just said there. If you're working more than about 40 hours in a field that there are people that are doing it less, then you're not hustling, you're not glamorous, you're just not yet skilled enough yet to do it in less hours.
Yep.
Because there's a certain point in sales where anything that's that's purely administrative, you eventually reach a point where you make enough money where you hire that out.
Yep.
And then you also realize that there's so much research that's been done that shows that most people, 5-6 hours tops, as far as our, you know, really dialed in productivity. So you wouldn't tell a world-class athlete the day before the Super Bowl to go hustle and grind and do a 2-a-day workout. You'd say, get your rest.
Yeah.
So, you know, we work in intelligence and knowledge type economy very often. So yeah, don't wear the extra hustle as a badge of honor. Wear it as I wouldn't say a badge of shame, because that's a really strong word, but a badge of I'm not there yet. Because why wouldn't you make the money and have the 3-day weekend?
Yes.
I don't know. Or something better.
Yep.
So
yeah, if you've got the badge of you know, you're working so many hours, you're missing the point here. The goal is you should be selling and being efficient with it, that you're having the lifestyle that you want. And that's the whole idea, right? And I guess if you're an entrepreneur, easier to do versus, because in a sense you're going to spend more time on your other hats that you got to put on for the rest of your job as an entrepreneur. But if you're working for somebody else, you could have a pretty good life. I've seen some people that work, you know, 4 or 5 hours in a day every day, and then they're done and they've hit their quota every day because they know how to do it. And that's totally fine. And if they wanted more money, they could just work at it a couple extra hours every day, and all of a sudden they've got more money. It's like, I always tell people, it's funny. Sometimes if you're really good at sales, it's like you're printing money, and doesn't seem fair, but that's really, you know, hey, I need a few extra bucks this weekend, I'm going to sell something. If you're good at it, you can do that. And I think that's the key takeaway, I think, today is, you know, get yourself to a point where you can work less and get more from your week by doing that.
Absolutely.
Wade, thank you again for coming on. I appreciate it. If there's anything else that you don't have to say, I think we should just cut it here. What do you think?
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
All right. Thanks, Wade. And until next time, slow down and close more, because when you do that, you will actually make more money.
Thank you for listening to The Slow Pitch. Do you have a question about sales? Call or text your question at 608-708-SLOW. That's 608-708-7569. Or you can email them to questions@theslowpitch.com. Slow down and close more.
Thanks as always for listening today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. We really appreciate it. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at The Slow Pitch. We were mixed today, as always, by Johnny Palakis, and we were produced by High Gravity Studios. Music credits and other notes are in the show notes section on theslowpitch.com, and we'll be back with another episode soon.